Hello and welcome to the Armenian News Network Gurung Week in Review. This show was recorded on Monday, August 22, 2022. I'm Aspet Bedrosyan, here with Hovik Manucharyan. Before we begin the show, we'd like to request that you subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Twitter. We're very active on Facebook, both as a group and a page. And we ask you to subscribe to our podcasts, which you can listen to wherever you get your podcasts. All of our Gurung links are on our Linktree page. We'll make sure that can be found on our profile pages, so you can click on it and find us on all social media platforms. So if you like our shows, please share with your friends and follow us everywhere you are used to getting your news. So thanks, and on with the show. Here are the major topics we'll touch on today. We're going to talk about the Surmalu blast, and then we're going to talk about developments in foreign affairs, things like Aliyev rejecting status for Artsakh, of no handover going on right now, Defense Minister Babikyan in Moscow, and Iran reiterating red lines on Sunik. Then we are going to talk a little bit about an update on the opposition movement. To talk about these issues, we have with us Benyamin Boğosyan, who is the chairman of the Yerevan-based think tank Center for Political and Economic Strategic Studies. Hello and welcome, Benyamin.
Hello, Aspet. Hello, Hovik. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. All right. Last Sunday, August 14, shortly before 1:30 p.m., an explosion ripped through a market, Surmalu, in central Yerevan. The blast killed 16 and injured over 60 people, and the premises were, of course, destroyed. As international condolences streamed in from around the world, hundreds of emergency responders worked for days to rescue people from the rubbles. The explosion happened in an environment of repeated bomb threats over the past weeks and months that increased in frequency to be almost a daily occurrence in Armenia, hemorrhaging public transportation and citizen services as authorities investigated each bomb threat. Yet despite an ongoing investigation by law enforcement and continuing bomb threats, Nikol Pashinyan ruled out terrorism and ascribed the cause of the explosion to a fireworks depot where 4 tons of explosives were somehow reportedly stored. Hovig and Benyamin, I am, of course, in the diaspora, but you guys are both in Yerevan. What are some of the developments around the scene of the disaster since last weekend? Any news? Any updates?
So, of course, this was a terrible tragedy, first of all. But regarding the reasons or the speculations or discussions, so 3 main reasons were discussed. Official one, something related to the lack of relative security arrangements to keep these firearms or something like that, which then blow off. The second option, which was discussed, that this was organized by people who would like to take the territory and then construct some new residential buildings. We all know that now there is a boom of residential building construction in Yerevan. Surmalu is in downtown Yerevan, and here prices per 1 square meter of new residential buildings without renovation, It's approximately $1,700 per square meter. So this was second option, and the names of one particular businessman was discussed. Then his office made a special statement saying that this is a political actions against him because he's close to current government and et cetera, et cetera. And third option was the idea that this could be done by foreign forces. And here also there were different hints or even the gossips, starting from Azerbaijan, Turkey, even reaching to Russia. And by the way, we saw a very tough reaction of Russian embassy, who officially sent a note to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Armenia, demanding from Armenian government to publicly reject this. And interestingly, this was on August 18, I believe. Then on August 19, the representative of Russian Foreign Ministry, during the press conference in Moscow, he reiterated that Russia still waits official answer from Armenian government. But as far as I know, today is August 22 evening. No official answer was sent, or at least there is no public available information that Armenian government answered this. And this tough reaction of Russian embassy was particularly interesting, because my perception is that Russia believes or thought that sometimes the anti-Russian circles in Armenia, like political parties, like experts, so think tanks, or part of civil society, they somehow are being steered or being triggered by government itself. That is why maybe the Russian government did this tough statement, demanding that Armenian government publicly rejects any notion that somehow Russia could be even indirectly involved in this blast.
Hovik, do we know anything more about the explosion itself?
The fact is that it appears that as of, I think, a few days ago, the rescuers were not even able to approach the main site of the blast. So they were able to clear the surrounding rubble, and the area is still under the threat of collapse. So that's why they're going very slowly. They, I believe, if my information is still fresh, there is still one person who they're looking for in the rubble. Obviously, I mean, this is a big tragedy and my condolences, but the fact that, you know, the work appears to be going pretty slowly is, you know, an indication of the state of Armenia's, you know, yet another ministry that is supposed to help strengthen Armenia's security. And, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, the public discussions that went around this is, you know, the readiness of Armenia's buildings for, you know, for events like
any
this,
kind of a
for
disaster.
Emergencies. And, you know, I recall you had an interview with Armen Derkurarian about earthquake readiness, and this is also on the same topic. You know, so the official narrative is there were some, you know, 4 tons of explosives. You know, the fact that anyone can bring 4 tons of explosives and store them, if that's true,
in the center of the city,
you know, is in the center of the city. That's like a, you know, huge red flag from all different directions. You know, from public administration, public policy. The fact that 1 week later we're still sort of trying to clear the rubble. You know, how ready are we for more? You know, even let's say war, if it comes to Yerevan, or earthquake, or future acts of terrorism, or future accidents like this. I did find that Nikol Pashinyan, you know, basically jumping the gun and saying that, you know, this is not a terrorism. I don't know why he had to rule that out and so early, considering that the investigation is still ongoing.
It undercuts the emergency
amateur
investigators.
You know, amateur. And I mean, who, like, considering that, you know, all the judges, like, you know, when he issues a public threat against judges, you know, all the judges seem to fall in line, you know, like it's not. So if he publicly rules out this is terrorism, which sane investigator is going to consider that scenario, even if like things are not developing right now? So, you know, Benjamin, you mentioned Russia, and you know, I was also able to monitor some of the media interviews that happened after the fact, and there were some, you know, so some foreign funded media multiple times had interviews from pundits or from speakers who explicitly pointed the finger at Russia, saying this is the signature of Russian special forces without any backing. I mean, that's so irresponsible to do. And, you know, you mentioned the Russian note of protest. Going a little bit deeper, you know, what do you think is the Armenian government's responsibility here in terms of controlling this type of content? I want to remind our listeners, and Benjamin, you may be aware of this too. Early 2020, one Facebook user posted fake news about Iran, and the National Security Service, you know, demonstratively arrested this person with the fake name of Diana Haratunyan. Apparently this was in the wake of the assassination of the Iranian general. But, you know, the real identity of this person was never disclosed. The circumstances around the criminal case were, you know, are still unknown. But under the guise of making sure that our relations with Iran are, you know, at a high level, Armenia arrested this person and we never learned anything else. What do you think is the Armenian government's responsibility with our strategic partner, Russia? And, you know, just wanted to get your thoughts on this.
I believe the problem, at least from a Russian point of view, is not the fact that there are experts or there are media who are mostly criticizing Russia, or which main target is to criticize Russia, to invite experts who are criticizing Russia nonstop. And even if you ask them, okay, What do you think about, I don't know, relations between Malaysia and Vietnam or some domestic turmoil in Sri Lanka? They will say, okay, this is all because of Russia, because of authoritarian Russian president. Russian authoritarian state should be collapsed. Only in that case, I don't know, relation between Vietnam and Malaysia will be improved. However, the problem here is not this, because we know that in current world there are a different kind of person, different kind of media, a different kind of financial interests. But as far as I understand, from a Russian point of view, the problem here was not the fact that some experts or some media were circulating clear anti-Russian sentiments, because we all know that there are several media outlets in Armenia who are circulating non-stop anti-Russian sentiments for years. But we never heard such an official or top reaction from Russia.
Right. So yeah, how should we assess this unusual expression at this point?
My understanding is that at least now, maybe the Russian government had some information, or the Russian government had some feeling that this was somehow connected with government. Like, okay, there's these experts at least, or this media organizations for this particular case, somehow they were receiving, if not instructions, but they're receiving some information from government circles. And like this time, like government was somehow, if not directly, but at least indirectly behind this circulation of these narratives that Russia somehow was involved in this blast, directly or indirectly. This is only rational explanation for me why Russia reacted so angrily, because otherwise we all know that there are many experts in Armenia who criticizes Russia for anything. There are media outlets in Armenia who are criticizing Russia nonstop, 24/7. But we never heard such tough reaction from Russia. So I believe this was maybe like a warning to the Armenian government that, okay, we all understand that there are anti-Russian forces in Armenia. Part of civil society is anti-Russian, and maybe it's their own right to be anti-Russian, pro-Russian, anti-American or pro-American. But we don't want to see the government of our ally somehow behind this anti-Russian rhetoric. At least this is my perception. Otherwise, I cannot find any other rational explanation. Why this time? Because otherwise, the Russian embassy should send these type of protest notes almost on a daily basis. Because again, we all know that there are a media outlet in Armenia, and there are experts in Armenia whose almost only goal is to criticize Russia nonstop for everything.
So within the domestic political scene, I noticed that Dikran Avinyan showed up on the site and he effectively announced his candidacy for the Yerevan mayoral race next year in 2023. He's a very close associate of Pashinyan's in the Civil Contract Party, of course. We all know that. Did you guys think this was surreal or simply insensitive? I mean, here we have people who are dead and dying around you. Dozens are burned and injured, and the guy's talking about his plans to run for mayor next year.
If I can chime in on this one, it's both surreal and insensitive. And, you know, to be fair, he said that, you know, he was asked that question three times, like, are you here on behalf of the civil as a mayor candidate? Mm-hmm. But he said, yes, I am here on behalf of civil contract as a mayor candidate. Yes. Despite the fact that he hasn't been officially nominated, we don't know when the elections in Yerevan will even happen. But also the fact that mayor is selected through a vote and the council. So it's not even like, you know, mayoral candidate. He is going to be a candidate in the council, after which, once a new council is elected, they will elect a mayor. So a lot of leapfrogging here by Tigran Avinyan, and very insensitive. But, you know, I don't think he even needs to campaign, because civil contract has a full majority. So why would he make a statement like that? I don't know.
Yeah, for me also, this was a very strange statement. It's really strange. And even if Mr. Avinyan thinks that he or believes that he can participate in September 2023 elections of a city council as a first number in the list of civic contract and as an official candidate for Yerevan mayor, I don't believe that this was the right step even from pure political PR perspective. So if you really think that he can be a candidate or could be a can participate in elections, I don't think this was the best case, best step, or best action even from this PR perspective. So again, I was surprised because I cannot find any rational explanation behind this move.
Benjamin, I don't want to lose focus on the tragedy itself, but is civil contract throwing the current mayor, Horacio Sarxian, under the bus with this action?
Okay, officially, there was there was discussions that Horacio Sarxian is not going to be a mayoral candidate for the next elections. And the Yerevan City Council is elected for 5 years. Previous elections took place in September 2018. So if everything goes according to the laws, the next city council election should take place in September 2023. And the elections are based on the party list, based on proportional system. So whatever party wants to participate in elections, that should prepare their list. And according to law, the first number in the list is automatically the candidate of mayor. So people voting not only for the party, like you don't vote for the candidate. It's not a direct election of mayor. You are voting for the party, but also you know that if Mr. Avignon is on the number one spot in the civic contract list, it means that if you are voting for civic contract, you're also voting for Mr. Avignon to become a mayor. But again, elections should take place in September 2023. And there was at least semi-official statement that civic contract will not put forward the candidacy of current mayor.
Right. So he was essentially like a, my word for that is he was a placeholder anyway. He was an official placeholder for mayor.
Yeah, something like de facto like acting mayor. So de jure is not an acting mayor because he was elected by city council. Mm-hmm. But something like he's a lame duck, if we use this American terminology. Everybody knows that more he will be mayor maximum for 1 year. I mean, current mayor.
Okay. Both of you guys are citizens of Yerevan, residents. Both of you guys are residents of Yerevan here. How do you assess the presence and involvement of the current mayor and the city council in Yerevan? First of all, within the context of this disaster in Surmalu, and also overall for the past year or so that we've had Horacio Sarxian's administration.
Okay, my understanding is that everybody perceives current mayor as de facto acting mayor. And my understanding is that even some positions inside municipality, like deputy mayors and etc., have been taken from him. Like the people have been appointed as deputy mayor, so it has nothing to do with him. These candidates have never agreed with him. So he's perceived like a person who is simply like plays the role of mayor until September 2023.
I would concur with that. Basically, he has had very little experience. Again, he's basically a placeholder for someone else that civil contract can come up with. And the only thing that I've known him for, in terms of like media that he generated was this stupid suggestion to sound the bells or play music.
Or some music, instead of
9 a.m. instead of 9 a.m., I think, as is being done on whatever, the public PA system that Armenia has, to move it down to 7 a.m. because Armenians should wake up early. Whether you believe Armenians should wake up early or late, that was one of the stupidest suggestions I've ever heard from a mayor, and we have much better things to do right now. But Benjamin, I wanted to ask you, going back to this tragedy, and the aftermath, it seems like the only policy suggestion that I've seen so far is the civil contract government has resurrected legislative plans to ban the sale of fireworks to private citizens, once the new National Assembly basically is in session. Was the possibility of selling fireworks a major factor here, considering that the investigation is still not done? And, what do you think about this proposal? And in general, how from a perspective of public policy, how civil contract has handled this disaster so far?
Frankly speaking, I don't believe that these some hostile suggestions without relative or relevant research should be welcomed. Because, some tragedy happens and immediately some people are jumping in telling that, we should ban this, we should ban that. But I believe that for any public policy action, you need, first of all, research. because the public policy should be research-based, not emotional-based. Yes, it was a terrible strategy. Obviously, 17 people have been killed. 16 are identified. The 17 is not identified yet. But again, like to jump in with immediate suggestions that, okay, let's ban this, or that, okay, I believe there are clear security rulings how to keep these fireworks or firearms or how to sell it. So let's see. I believe this was emotional or maybe even populist. Like, okay, something terrible right. happened. People, I say, oh, no, it's a terrible world, fireworks. These 17 people have been killed because of these fireworks, and let's ban them. But again, this was not a research-based suggestion, and this is in line with populist policy, I believe, not even in Armenia, but in general. When we speak okay. about what the populism is for me also when something happens, then you feel that, okay, maybe now within 3 hours after this tragedy, people will say, oh, fireworks, they are terrible things. We are suffering because some stupid guy is making fireworks after 12 a.m. or 1 a.m. or etc.
Yeah.
Now this terrible tragedy, let's get rid of firearms or fireworks. But again, I believe that public policy should be based on at least basic research. First to identify exactly. problems and then to offer solutions.
You know, even if fireworks were illegal, there are other explosives. You know, cars are dangerous too. Like, you know, but cars are a lot. So how did 4 tons of fireworks end up in the middle of the city and blow up to cause such a huge destruction?
Exactly.
Anyway, moving forward, we want to spend some time on developments in foreign affairs. 10 days ago, Aliyev held a live press conference during which he announced that he would grant no status of any sort to Nagorno-Karabakh or Artsakh. We have beaten this dead horse significantly during our past episodes. The message from Aliyev has been clear. Benjamin, you've been very clear about Azerbaijan's strategy of forcing an attrition on the population of Armenians in Artsakh by terrorizing them and threatening at least repopulating parts of Artsakh by Azerbaijanis. So the imminent situation, of course, is the handover of Aghamno, Berzor, and Lachin. But we'll talk about that. But do you have any comments on Aliyev's?
Just a few comments. Aliyev has not said anything new. But we should understand the problem here is the fact that this is my perception, that our government negotiates from the position of weakness. Our government believes that, okay, Azerbaijan defeated us in 2020. We were destroyed. So we are losers. We lost the war. We are losers. Azerbaijan is winner. Winner takes all. Loser should suffer whatever it must to suffer. So this is the perception of our government, that because we lost the war and because we are losers and we have been defeated, so we should implement all wishes or whims of Azerbaijan. And this is a strategic problem for Armenia, because if you are negotiating from the perspective that, okay, because you lost the war, now you are going to accept all demands of your interlocutor or your rival, this will only end in more catastrophes. Yes, Armenia lost the war, but every nation loses the war. But no nation says, okay, because I lost the war in 2020 until 2085, I should feel myself a loser and I should do whatever Azerbaijan wants. This is a non-working formula for me. Again, the current Armenian government, they think this way. Okay, we lost the war, so we have to suffer. But sorry, guys, this is not the right way to move forward. At the end of the day, if you believe that you are a loser,
this is exactly why we want them to resign and go away.
Even in a small system, I'm not speaking about state, I'm speaking about the, let's take a soccer team, football team. Let's assume the team was beaten by 7-0. Yeah, 7-0 is a terrible thing. Let's remember the semi-final of World Cup in Brazil, when Germany beat Brazil 7-1. In Brazil, this was terrible strategy for Brazilian. But it does not mean that after that, every new coach or the Brazilian team will say, "Okay, we are losers. We have been beaten by Germany, so we should have been beaten by all other teams, like by, I don't know, France, by Italy, by Russia, I don't know by whom. So if you believe that you are a loser, then there is no sense to continue to govern. I'm not speaking about even about the state, even very small systems like soccer team, I don't know, small company, and etc. And this is a problem, because if our state is being governed by people who really believe that Armenia, because Armenia was defeated in 2020, Armenia is a loser, and it should realize all Azerbaijani demands, it means that we will have more and more Azerbaijani demands, we will have more and more concessions, and this is not going to end. The problem is that this is not going to end. Okay, you will give Alavno and Berdor, tomorrow Aliyev will demand the dismantling of Nagorno-Karabakh Defense Army. You will dismantle Nagorno-Karabakh Defense Army, then Aliyev will demand the return of Azerbaijanis to Stepanakert. You will accept Azerbaijanis in Stepanakert, he will demand return of Azerbaijanis to Sunik. Again, this is not going to end. And if your main vision of negotiations is that, okay, I am loser, Azerbaijan is winner, so winner is always right, loser is always wrong, so I have no other option than to come and say, okay, Mr. Aliyev, what do you want next? This is insane, frankly speaking.
Yeah, and to me, the fact that, you know, let's buy this argument there, because there are, you know, I don't know how many, but there are a significant element, especially the ones that support Pashinyan, saying, you know what, we lost Artsakh. They were not maybe treating Artsakhis the same way as other Armenians anyway. I don't want to go into that. But the fact is that Aliyev is not only going to demand Artsakh, but he is demanding Sunik. And the future sovereignty of Sunik is, to me, at least at stake.
Let's not forget that recently President Aliyev published a photo holding the map of Azerbaijan. And if you look into this map, you will see that the map which President of Azerbaijan, again, I'm not speaking about some marginalized political forces like nationalists, ultra-nationalists. We are speaking about President of the state, the leader of the state, President of Azerbaijan. And he took a map of Azerbaijan and he took a photo of him with map of Azerbaijan. As we look into this map, you will see that part of Armenian territory, I believe part of Gerarkonik region with Lake Sevan, part of Sunik and part of Vyodor, they are part of Azerbaijan in the map which was taken by President Aliyev. So again, all these discussions that, okay, let's allow Azerbaijan to swallow and digest Artsakh fully without noise, let's not create problems for Azerbaijani digesting process, hopefully they will forget about Armenia. Again, this is factually wrong. I'm telling this is not wrong from moral vision, from patriotic vision, or this is factually wrong.
Yeah. So the imminent situation, of course, is the handover of Avno and Berzor in the Lachin corridor. Hovig, I believe you were in Avno the last 2 or 3 days. Can you give us a little bit of a report from the ground?
Yeah, basically, August 25 is a new deadline set by Aliyev in some arbitrary fashion following the military activities that occurred earlier, in August, I believe. You know, and Aliyev basically announced that anyone left in the village after August 25 will be treated as a terrorist or an enemy combatant. So much for Armenians having the same right as Azerbaijani citizens.
Exactly.
But I was there visiting as part of an initiative from a group called Akan Andakan, Hovhannes Ishkhanyan, and so forth. And we were, you know, the group was trying to basically bring more people. They were actually there as documentary journalists, but we were trying to invite more people to visit Aravno. When we arrived on August 14th, by the time we arrived in Aravno, there was a checkpoint set up at the road entering the village. And basically the Russian peacekeepers were asking that those entering the village be accompanied or be guests of someone who is registered in the village, which I think is a good idea, because what we saw in Karabajar and Berzor previously at the end of the November 2020 war was that, you know, there was a lot of looting, there was a lot of theft happening last minute. Then, you know, we heard that besides August 25, there was another deadline, which is August 20th, which is a deadline for all public utilities being turned off, water, gas, electricity, communications. But in fact, that started happening earlier. That started happening when I was there around, I think, August 16. And the situation there is like there's a lot of apathy. Apparently, the government of Artsakh has given the people there a certificate of 10 million dram if they don't damage their home, if they don't burn it, and they have a choice of being resettled in Armenia or in Artsakh. So I talked to a family from Maraga.
Yes, it was a massacre in 1992, in April 1992.
Yeah. Right.
So I talked to this family who were from there. Many of their relatives were perished there, but they came and they resettled in Aghavno, and now they have to be moved. Of course, then a significant number of the villagers were from other areas of Artsakh. So those who had roots in Artsakh chose to stay in Artsakh. Those who had roots outside of Artsakh opted to leave. And maybe there are those who actually don't know, you know, that they really fear about the situation of the future of Artsakh. The next thing I'm going to say is this incident that happened with Hakin Az. But before I say that, I want to restate clearly that you should go without saying that the presence of Russian peacekeepers is the only thing that is keeping Armenians from Artsakh, in Artsakh, from being massacred and ethnically cleansed. But this incident that happened with Hakin Az is very puzzling. And what happened is the editor of Hakin Az undercover showed up in Artsakh with an escort of Russian peacekeepers. They were able to trick many of the, well, not many, because they weren't there for a long time, but they were able to trick some of the villagers, including the village mayor, into giving an interview. I think that it was irresponsible from the Russian peacekeepers to allow this to happen. And you could sense that also they were not very excited for this, and they basically rushed the whole thing along. But this incident was used to further mentally terrorize Armenians, as we saw from the coverage. And they basically selectively quoted bits and pieces there and tried to paint the residents of Aghavno as not being there, and Aghavno is being occupied by terrorists and so forth, and they're preparing for a last stand there. And it damages their legitimacy. And I don't know who is that useful for other than the Azerbaijanis who want the Russians out. In fact, the article itself also took pot shots at the Russian peacekeepers, which is interesting. So I think publicly, at least, the Russian peacekeepers owe an explanation of what happened, maybe even reprimand the officer who allowed this to happen. And all this happening at the same time when Armenian media were disallowed from entering Aghavno unless someone was able to basically get a villager to invite them, including Artsakh Public TV. They were not allowed to go there. So that was what I basically took away. And when I left 2-3 days ago, most of the families, children and women were evacuated from the village. And the situation I'm aware of as of now is that there are very few people left in the village. And I think everything is going according to plan for handover on August 25.
So what's going to happen to this road and its status as a corridor or whatever?
The other thing I should mention from my discussions with different people is that, so obviously this whole thing started when Azerbaijan announced that the section of the road, the new road, that was supposed to be just the plan for which was supposed to happen by November 2023 was complete, and therefore immediately Armenians should start using it. Despite the fact that on the Armenian side, the government of Armenia should have built the road, which it hasn't. And the Armenian side said that it will build it until, like, you know, in 8 months.
Well, they said it's going to take 250 days or something like that.
Exactly. So until then, apparently there's this plan of using this dirt road, basically a gravel road or whatever, that is different. And it will connect to Aghavno from Gornizor, before you reach Gornizor.
That's
it's
right.
Like a detour route. But I can't imagine how, like, you know, trucks and families are going to be using this road for 250 days while the Armenian side completes its construction. That's the status. Well, what was interesting, Benjamin, maybe I want to go jump to that next, is that, first of all, I want to say that this was being painted as an inevitability by all sides. Except the Armenian side said that they had no agreement on this. We covered this last time where I think that there's evidence, at least there's some evidence that even the Armenian side had agreed to this, but publicly they let Artsakh authorities take the blame. And they said that this is stemming from a demand by Azerbaijan, but also from the Russian peacekeepers. Then that's curious because on August 17, Maxim Seleznyov, counselor to the Russian ambassador in Armenia issued an eye-opening statement saying specifically that the Russian peacekeeper forces, in order for them to be restationed, the new route will need to be complete, and any new route that they are restationed across will be essentially considered a new Lachin corridor. And by that definition, it means that 2.5 kilometers on either side of that road will remain guarded by the Russian peacekeepers, and that goes straight through Aghano. So why in that case, let's say even for the short term, you know, from now until whenever the Armenians start building the road, why, did we have to depopulate Aghano of Armenians? Benjamin, what is your thoughts on Seleznyov's statement? Anything else I said so far, and my question?
Before Benjamin, you go on, I also have a tiny little thing to add. If Armenians in these territories, which are now becoming Azerbaijani land, are going to be treated as Azerbaijani citizens, the same as any other citizens, why did they have to move? They could have, shouldn't they be given the option of staying and taking Azerbaijani passport and being treated as Azerbaijanis if they so desired? Was there a need to forcibly depopulate them?
Okay, regarding the last question, so from Azerbaijani perspective, they say that, okay, we are ready to provide citizens of passports to those Armenians who live in Nagorno-Karabakh, so-called within former Nagorno-Karabakh Autonomous Oblast borders. From Azerbaijani perspective, everyone who lives outside former Enkao borders, including the population of Berzor, Aghavno, and Sus, they believe that they are illegal immigrants and even terrorists, because Azerbaijan is telling that, okay, these territories outside Nagorno-Karabakh Autonomous Oblast, these were occupied territories of Azerbaijan. So these people entered Azerbaijan or live in Azerbaijani territory illegally, and etc., etc. So this is, from Azerbaijani point of view, why they demanded the withdrawal of all Armenians from Berzor. But they are stating that, okay, Armenians in Stepanakert, Armenians in Askeran, Lartuni in Martakert can live happily with Azerbaijani passports. And by the way, there's a huge if, because, of course, Azerbaijan may say that, okay, no problem, you may have Azerbaijani passports and live happily, but only those who did not commit war crimes. We all know that from Azerbaijani logic, starting from 1992 until 2020, Armenians committed a lot of war crimes. So what will actually happen? Azerbaijanis will enter the Armenian village or even towns, and they will say, okay, now we are going to investigate. Of course, if you didn't commit war crime, you can live with Azerbaijani passport. But if you committed war crime, sorry, guy, you have to be put into the jail.
Yeah, basically any adult male who participated in self-defense of Artsakh would be considered...
can be depicted by Azerbaijan as a war criminal, because he participated in self-defense or, from Azerbaijani perspective, act of aggression, act of occupation, or whatever else. Regarding Hovik's question, why we are evacuating Aghavno? Very interesting question, because as far as I understand, there was no written, signed document of evacuation. Yes, we all saw that Haik Hanumyan arrived in Berdur and Aghavno on August 5th and made an oral statement that because we have some evacuation plan, so according to this evacuation plan, population of the city of Berdor and these two small villages should be evacuated until August 25. But again, I am not sure that there is any legal document, signed document by any Nagorno-Karabakh representative of Nagorno-Karabakh Republic authorities, that according to this law, Article Z of Nagorno-Karabakh Republic, I declare evacuation, and according to evacuation, population of this one city and two villages should be evacuated, signed by, I don't know, president, state minister, whatever else. So from legal point of view, it's a very strange situation, because even if after several years someone will, maybe new authorities in Armenia or new authorities in Nagorno-Karabakh Republic, they will try to understand, or even they will try to launch an investigation trying to understand what happened and why, I'm afraid that they will find no legal or at least written signed document, as far as I know. Maybe Hovi Kanet, maybe is aware of any such a document, I mean signed and stamped document. by any official of Nagorno-Karabakh Republic regarding the evacuation?
I spoke to some officials on the, and based on the condition of anonymity, they told me that such an, you know, a document could be prepared, but even if it's prepared, and I didn't get a sense that it's already done matter, you know, but if even if it's prepared, it will be secret, which is very, very interesting. I think that, you know, people would have a right to know what's happening to them publicly.
Yeah, what's happening and why in this case?
The question that I had was that here are the Russians, here's a Russian official, and it has, is basically saying that the new corridor is equivalent to the Lachin corridor. So wherever, like, you know, however Armenians use to get from Armenia to Artsakh proper and vice versa is Lachin corridor. And starting August 25, I think they'll be going directly through Aravno. So, you know, I don't know. Has anyone asked a clarifying question from the Russian authorities and foreign ministry on this basic statement, essentially basically saying that Aravno is safe? You know, it's going to be in the hands of the Russian peacekeepers if this happens, because this dirt road is going to go directly through Aravno. So why?
Yeah, it's at least until March or April 2023, when this new road will be completely constructed by Armenia.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any further discussions that, okay, if at least until spring 2023, we still should use this bypass road to bypass Berdor, but not bypass Aravno. And the Russian troops should protect this new road, including this bypassing road, which again will pass through Aravno. In that case, why we are leaving Aravno? No, I never heard about any discussions or questions about what's going on.
Okay. Right. Let me quickly move on. Benjamin, while this diplomatic row between Armenia and Russia that we talked about a little earlier was festering, Defense Minister Babigyan was in Moscow and he met with Defense Minister Shoigu. Reportedly, he was there for a few reasons. We'll put them in the show notes. He went to the Army 2022 Military Expo, and then there was a conference on international security, etc. And they talked about this whole peacekeeping mission in Nagorno-Karabakh. Was there anything notable about this meeting? Was anything achieved? Do you want to talk about this?
Almost nothing is known what they really discussed and what they achieved or what they did not achieve. Usually, Armenian defense ministers participate in such army games or international security conferences organized by Russia. So I don't think that this was much surprise that our defense minister was in Moscow, but I don't believe that some significant discussions or negotiations took place. As far as I know, now the work or job is underway to organize a new meeting between Russian, Armenian, and Azerbaijani leaders, is in Moscow or maybe in Sochi. And according to some information, this new meeting may take place in late August or early September. So I believe anything serious will be discussed or agreed during the leaders' meeting. Of course, if this meeting is going to happen.
Benjamin, you have made your position on this known, but I think we are obliged to cover it because it happened. 10 days ago, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi reiterated an earlier statement by Ayatollah Khamenei that Iran is sensitive about its border with Sunni and that Iran would oppose any attempt to alter them. Clearly, in reference to Turkish and Azeri sort of, you know, plans to you know, about the Zangezur corridor, there's a significant amount of people that still have hope that maybe Iran will come to save us. Will that, you know, for once, maybe like at least for the next 3-4 shows, we will not talk about this. So for the next 3-4 shows, can you say, like, does Iran have a potential to militarily help, or, and if not, in what way can Iran help? Walk the walk instead of talking the talk.
Yeah, I think the most important question is to know how involved Iran is ready to get. Will it actually commit military to it?
Okay, first of all, no one will save us if we are ready to say goodbye to our lands. And unfortunately, this whole tragedy in Aravno and Berdor shows that the huge part of Armenian society is ready to quite calmly accept the loss of another territory of historical pure Armenian lands. And I can assure you that everybody noticed this. Every external actor who has interest in South Caucasus, they noticed this and they fixed it. That current Armenian society, at least significant part of population of Republic of Armenia, is ready to accept quite calmly, without any noise, without any resentment, the loss of additional lands. So this is very negative for us, not only the development, but also for the foreign actor assessment on the geopolitics of South Caucasus and on what to accept from Armenia and what to do for Armenia. Regarding the Iran, again, as I mentioned several times, I exclude any direct military clash between Iran and Azerbaijan. I don't believe that Iranian troops will enter Sunik and will fight Azerbaijanis and will force them back from part of Sunik. But definitely Iran is ready to provide us military equipment. Of course, if we will be ready to buy from Iran and to defy our American partners, because US position is very clear. Even one Iranian soldier participating in any military drills in the territory of Armenia, I'm speaking about one soldier, one officer, it will significantly ruin
impact,
or will create significant tensions, relations between US and Armenia. Definitely, arm purchases from Iran will complicate the situation more, despite the fact that Iran has almost everything which Armenia needs, because we need drones, and now even Russia is buying Iranian drones, at least according to Western intelligence, to use them in Ukraine. And also Iran has these short-range missiles up to 500, 600 kilometers, which will allow Armenia at least to use them as a deterrence to sell Azerbaijan that, okay, to say Azerbaijan that, okay, guys, if you're going to continue your dreams about Sunik, about Lake Sevan, and etc., don't forget that we have capacity and we can simply destroy your oil and gas industry. And I'm not speaking about pipelines, because pipeline is nothing. You can bomb pipeline, you need 2 or 3 or maximum 1 week to restore pipeline. I'm speaking about oil and gas terminals in Caspian Sea. I'm speaking about oil and gas wells in Caspian Sea. Because these terminals and these wells, Azerbaijan will need billions of dollars and years to restore. So Iran theoretically has many things in military terms which Armenia needs. Again, mostly drones and short-range missiles. So I'm pretty sure that Iran will be happy to sell them, maybe even with discount price. But here, we will have problems with our partner, let's put it this way.
Okay, let's go to the next topic. So last week, the Armenian National Security Service proposed setting up 3 checkpoints on the border of Armenia and Azerbaijan. They basically prepared the draft decision ready for Pashinyan to sign. And this proposal was in response to a public address from Pashinyan during a government session 2 weeks ago, where he basically requested it. And I think he even mentioned the term of giving Azerbaijanis unhindered access to Armenia, and unhindered being the key word here, which is also included in the November 9th statement. On the western border with Azerbaijan, the proposed checkpoint will be in Yerask, while on the eastern border, the checkpoints are proposed to be in Sotk, in the Gerarkunik province, and Karahunj in the Sunik province. Karahunj is the location on the Goris-Gapan highway that Pashinyan handed over to Aliyev, apparently based on verbal agreements in 2021. Benjamin, what is your assessment of this whole story? And so let's begin with, you know, your assessment, and then I have a few more questions.
Really difficult to give some clear assessment, because lack of information. As far as I know, Azerbaijan would like to have the highway connecting Azerbaijan with Nakhchivan in parallel with a railroad and very close to Arax River. This was as Azerbaijani visions that, okay, we need railway across our in Sunik, and also we need highway also very close to this railway, again, along the Arax River. But if you look into these 3 checkpoints, it means that Azerbaijanis will enter to Armenia somewhere near Sisian, and then they could drive from Sisian back to Yerevan, enter there, which is a little bit strange because if they can enter Armenia from Sisian, then there is all so-called Angelakot Bichanek or Bichanek highway or road. So if Armenia is creating one checkpoint near the Armenia-Azerbaijan border near Sisian, why they don't create another checkpoint on Armenia-Nakhichevan border near Angelakot is very strange. The two other checkpoints are relatively okay, so you can enter Armenia from Kelbajar, then drive via Vartenis to Martuni, then from Martuni drive to Yerevan, from Yerevan to Yerask, and from Yerask enter Azerbaijan. It was something like, as far as I understand, it will be Vartenis, Martuni, Yerevan, Yerask highway, as far as I can understand, simply from geographic locations of these checkpoints.
Will Armenians be able to use that same road, the Kelbajar road, to go to Stepanakert?
Of course, no. As far as I understand, which, by the way, is very right question and very strange situation, because we are speaking about restoration of communications, but Azerbaijan is saying that, okay, you will have one highway by which you can connect with Karabakh. And no one here from Armenian side saying, okay, but we have quite new highway, which was opened in September 2017.
Constructed by Armenians, from all Armenians.
Yes, okay. If we are speaking about the restoration of communications, why only one highway should connect Armenia with Nagorno-Karabakh? And no logical answer can be here.
Yeah, so the other question, given that there are no diplomatic relations between Armenia and Azerbaijan, what does it even mean to allow Azerbaijanis to access Armenian roads? How will passport control be happening? And I guess I'm guessing that it won't. And if not, then isn't this what Aliyev wants, which is the corridor, in this case, multiple corridors to Armenia?
From legal point of view, okay, we may argue that because both Armenia and Azerbaijan are CIS members, and there is a visa-free agreement between all CIS members. By the way, which allows us, for example, to enter visa-free to Russia, Georgia, also Georgia left CIS, but it's still there, but Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Belarus, and others. But from another point of view, we do not have any diplomatic relations. So, frankly speaking, I don't even imagine how this is possible. Okay, someone from Azerbaijan is driving. Okay, let's assume he is driving. He's showing his passport somewhere in near Kelbajar Sotk. Okay, then he enters Armenia. And what happens if he's not driving through this Sotk, Vartenis, Martuni, Yerevan, Yerask highway, but simply from Vartenis he's driving to Dilijan, to Sevan, to Yerevan, like rent house in Yerevan with Azerbaijani passport, and continues to live in Yerevan? This all are, there are 100 questions and no answers for me, for frankly speaking. I'm in a very difficult position to comment or to assess or to analyze anything, because again, I have 100 questions and no answers.
Yeah, I think that that's sort of the, from what I understand in terms of the public interviews, no one has those answers. I haven't seen those answers anywhere. I guess the opposition basically is phrasing this as basically Ramil Safarov can enter Armenia without any passport control.
Theoretically, yes. Theoretically,
and
we
basically,
may end up
yeah, they're right.
Well, let's hope if we're wrong, then, you know, please, someone who wants to correct us, you know, let us know how. And as the last item of our discussion today, I wanted to talk about the rekindling of the opposition movement, what it may entail. You know, as you may know, the resistance movement held one protest early in August after, I believe, or during the military activities, and then announced a pause until September 2. Which is going to be the next major proposed rally from the Armenian Resistance Movement, which is officially the parliamentary opposition, Hayastan Dashing and Patibunan Dashing. Given that we're in a pause now, what is your assessment of the Zartnir Lao Resistance Movement that started in April, May of this year? They obviously didn't reach their goal of ousting Pashinyan so far, but you know, what was maybe the cause for that? What were their failures? What can you say?
Frankly speaking, I don't believe that the initial or real goal was to kick out Pashinyan, because I believe that these guys are too smart to understand that this was not going to happen. if the goal was somehow to prevent Armenia from concessions, I'm afraid even this was failed because we gave Agavno, Berdor, and Sus, and probably we are going to make additional concessions. So, yes, I would say that at the end of the day, strategic assessments should be a failure, and not because Pashinyan did not resign, because I never saw that even there is a 1% chance that Pashinyan will resign as a result of this movement. But I saw that, okay, this at least could create some atmosphere when Armenian government could be a little bit more decisive during negotiations, and not like say as a mantra, like we are loser, Azerbaijan is winner, so we have to do nothing, we can do anything except accepting all Azerbaijani demands. But however, even this don't happen, and we see that opposition was able to gather support and permanent support of some amount of people, maybe 10 or 15,000, but no more. And even for Armenia, which population is maybe 2.7 million real population, 10 or 15,000 people are not enough to make any changes. I'm not speaking about even to force the government to resign.
Yeah. So on that note of actually not gathering enough people, there's frequently criticism, that we hear, where basically, you know, we need new faces in the opposition in order to finally, you know, gather, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, or even like, you know, 70 or 80,000. Although the opposition claims that there were days when they had 40, 50,000. And I'm, you know, I want to believe that because I was there, and also sort of, I'm not an expert in estimating numbers, but there were days that they reached that peak, but not consistently. But so apparently acting independently, former ambassador of Republic of Armenia to Poland and former chief of staff of the Constitutional Court of Armenia, Edgar Ghazaryan, has called for a rally tomorrow, August 23 at 1700 or 5 p.m. He was our guest in May when we were covering the resistance movement. So feel free to go back in our podcast and listen to that episode. Frankly, maybe I'm dreaming, but I'm intrigued by a future potential government of national unity with Edgar Ghazaryan, Avetik Chalabian maybe as a defense minister, Arman Tatoyan maybe as a president, augmented by existing leaders of the Armenian opposition, which I think is important, and some of whom I think have great credentials to still be considered as future leaders of Armenia. Benjamin, what do you think about Edgar Ghazaryan specifically, his sort of announced action tomorrow, and your prognosis of the Armenian internal political situation?
Okay, regarding Edgar Ghazaryan, I don't know him personally. As far as I know, he's quite a respected person. He was also governor of Vyadol region before becoming an ambassador in Poland, right, and for different circles, starting from Vyadol and ending from diplomatic circles. As far as I know, he has mostly positive assessments, let's put it this way. But is it enough to galvanize some political movement in Armenia when society mostly is in apathy and most people simply don't care for anything? And it's very difficult to assess. We'll be able to somehow galvanize support again in the society when lots of people don't care about anything except their personal life. Like only they will start to care if bomb will ruin their personal apartment. In that case, they would say, oh, something happened, now we should do something. If no, right, they simply don't care. We can go deep into the reasons, objective, subjective, psychological, and etc. But this is the situation. Will Mr. Ghazaryan be able to change this? Okay, I'm not so optimistic, but let's see. Regarding the new faces, I believe issue even is not new faces. The issue is text. I mean, political text and ideas and what people are going to do. Because even in the situation of Berdor and Alon, okay, as you mentioned, opposition, some opposition are telling that, okay, this is a done deal, so we can do anything, we can simply complain. But then the question arises, if everything is done deal, but then after, I'm pretty sure that in 1 month, Azerbaijan Ali will demand the dissolution of Nagorno-Karabakh Defense Army. And if, right, again, the opposition is going to say that, okay, this is a done deal, what we can do? Pashinyan signed the November 10th statement, so we can do nothing, or we can make a statement in our Facebook account or in our web pages. So even those people who don't care, who care, and even those who don't care, you should explain these people that, okay, your position of not caring, this is going to be very bad for you. But again, here we need some ideas, because from another point of view, yes, if someone will come and say, okay, let's declare a full mobilization and start large-scale war to re-establish the borders of Nagorno-Karabakh Republic as of September 26, 2020, this is also absurd. So I believe here is not only the issue of new faces, also this is very important, but also what these faces are going to speak, because political text is important. So new faces, but also some new texts.
Right.
Well, otherwise, this vicious circle will continue. A majority of people will don't care, and we will lose, lose, and lose.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, in any case, internal politics will be heating up in the coming weeks as the hot summer comes to an end. We'll keep our hands on the pulse, and we'll be sure to cover major developments as they arise.
Thank you, Benjamin. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Benjamin. Thank you, Asbet.
Hey everyone, this is Hovik. I hope you found today's podcast informative. When Asbet asked me if I have any rants I'd like to make, I told him I didn't, but I do want to close today's podcast with an inspirational poem by Yuri Sahakyan, and it is recited by prominent Armenian linguist, scholar of Oriental Studies, and Iranologist Gurgen Melikyan, called Bertbar.
Yuri Sahakyan Chikayim. Իմ լավագույն բարեկամներից, որ գրել է գեղեցիկ մի բանաստեղծություն. Դար ու դարեր, լեռների մեջ, ձորերի մեջ, դաշտերի մեջ արևանիստ, թնդացել է մեր այս պարը հին հայկական, թմուկների որոտնտոս զարգերի մեջ, զուրնաների արևածով ինչուններում. Ու ելել ենք ինքնամորած, արիական, ու պարել ենք գոյատևման պարը վսեն, ու պարել ենք ինչպես ոչ ոք դեռ չի պարել, արնաս կյանքի ու պարիքալի. Հեյ, հեյ, ով է զսպում թևացում իր թևերի, ով է զսպում արյան երկը իր ոտքերի, ելեք, 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 այս սաղկաշատ զորերի մեջ, այս դաշտերում արևանիստ, մենք դեր պիտի պարենք, մեր այս պարը մակարումի, մեր այս պարը հարատևման, լերների մեջ, լերների հետ, դար ու դարեր.
And that's our show this week. We hope you liked it. Now please find us on social media and share and like our content so we can get to more people. Thank you.